From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris. Today we present the fourth report in our series on the world after SARS. As health officials brace for a possible resurgence of SARS this fall, they're studying efforts to battle the disease last spring. As SARS swept out of Asia, public health authorities in many areas resorted to a disease control technique that dates to biblical times. They set up quarantines. It was the biggest use of quarantines anywhere in well over half a century. Taiwan alone told more than 150,000 people to stay home. Now officials are trying to decide the role of quarantines in future outbreaks, including the United States. NPR's Richard Harris reports.
Even the word quarantine has a medieval feel to it. It conjures up the plague, cholera, smallpox. But in its latest incarnation, quarantine has a very different feel. David Heyman from the Center for Strategic and International Studies says, consider Singapore. When 3,000 people were placed in home quarantine there because of SARS, the Singapore health authorities equipped them all with little cameras that worked over the internet.
And they would randomly call up people during the day, everybody who was home quarantined, and those persons would go on to their video conference and they would take their thermometer, put it in their mouth, and the person on the other end in the public health community would look to see that the thermometer was registering a fever or not a fever.
Anyone caught violating home quarantine was to be tagged with an electronic device that would automatically call the authorities if they left home again. Guards patrolled the perimeter of quarantined neighborhoods. In Taiwan, the response was much less draconian. There, health officials ultimately sent more than 150,000 people home and told them to stay there for 10 days. Susan Maloney from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention headed a team that went to Taiwan to see how this would work. She says the nation was remarkably well prepared.
Taiwan had the advantage of having had to respond to numerous natural disasters in the past, including things like typhoons. So they did have an infrastructure that could work to provide the logistical support for undertaking quarantine measures. And these include such things as providing food and mental health counseling and financial support to the people who are quarantined.
The focus of public attention was the hospitals, where some workers and patients found themselves quarantined in the same building with actual SARS cases. Crowds gathered out front. This was not a protest, though. It was a show of public support, even gratitude. BCC Radio in Taiwan broadcast this event and others like it. One day, a distraught woman whose husband died of SARS in the hospital tried to break into the quarantine area to see him one last time. Another day, the mayor of Taipei himself showed up. We all appreciate you workers on the front lines, and we, the citizens of Taipei, will not forget you, Mayor Ma Ying-jeou declared. The situation was less stressful in homes and apartments, but everyone sent into quarantine was paid a stipend, the average salary for that country. That cost Taiwan $17 million, a bargain compared with the potential financial losses from a runaway epidemic. And Dr. Maloney says almost everyone cooperated.
There was less than 1% that violated quarantine, and there was a fining system that was set up for those people, fines varying anywhere from 1,000 to about 8,000 U.S. dollars.
That's serious money in Taiwan. It was Dr. Maloney's strong impression that most people didn't need that threat. They realized that staying home protected them and helped solve a social problem. That message was clearly and repeatedly delivered to the populace by health officials.
Although there were orders that were instituted and implemented in Taiwan, I think that we would have seen a similar situation were this just a voluntary measure.
There are, of course, big differences between Taiwan and the United States, so the question is how to sell that idea here if it turns out to be necessary. Step one, public health officials shy away from the term quarantine. Instead, they talk about sheltering in place. David Heyman at CSIS says health officials would like to have the public think of quarantine as a glorified snow day.
This concept is one that we're quite comfortable with. We may have to take 2 or 3 days, and you know, everyone runs to the store and they pick up their canned goods and their milk and whatnot, and they stay home. That's effectively what we may need to do if there's an outbreak or a bioterrorism incident. People may need to stay home just to protect themselves, their families, and frankly, the general population in their community.
It's a reassuring concept, but Lawrence Gostin at the Georgetown University Law Center says it's utterly untested.
We really haven't had a mass quarantine in the United States in living memory, and we really don't know how to do it.
2 years ago, health authorities put on a drill to see how it would work. It was a disaster. There was no mechanism to get food and other essentials to people in home quarantine. The system quickly broke down.
So it's not so easy as just to say, oh, it's a snow day, stay home. You have to make sure that people are safe, that they don't get exposed to infectious diseases, that they're fed, clothed, taken care of. And that's a big logistical job, and it's just not going to happen with, oh, gosh, it's a snow day.
And then there's the matter of attitude. The people of Taiwan share a sense of community spirit that Gostin doesn't see in the United States.
We used to have it. The classic Republican tradition in the United States was one that prized itself on civic duty and community relationships and things like that. But in the late 20th century, we've really moved to kind of a very rugged form of libertarianism in the United States, of autonomy, liberty, privacy.
Even so, a survey by the Kennedy School of Government during last spring's SARS outbreak showed that 93% of Americans would agree to be quarantined at home if asked to do so. That's about the same response that the survey found in Canada, where there was indeed a big and successful SARS quarantine. So Susan Maloney says Americans might not be as uncooperative as the conventional wisdom would suggest. The secret to success, she says, is to inform the public carefully and get people thinking in their own self-interest.
I think the main reason why the public will participate is that we are now focusing on quarantine as a way to deliver care and support and protection to people who may have been exposed to the disease, at the same time protecting the greater community from exposure.
Practically no local government in the whole United States is geared up to provide that promised care. David Heyman at CSIS is developing some guidelines so local governments can develop plans quickly. But they won't be ready if SARS strikes the United States this fall. Fortunately, Heyman says Taiwan health officials learned that their massive quarantine last spring turned out to be largely unnecessary.
And they made a new policy so that in the fall, if there's a re-emergence of SARS, they will ratchet it down a bit, and their policy is this. No fever, no quarantine.
And it turns out that of the 150,000 people quarantined in Taiwan, only 30 got sick. Richard Harris, NPR News.